Hey, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Trashy Divorces.
Trashy Divorces.
Everybody wants to rule the world this week. Let's talk about, God, Tears for Fears rocking my middle school 1985 world yeah. with their release of Songs from the Big Chair. It's a great song.
It is a great song.
Titling this episode, where we talk about people with two very different power quests that turned out very differently
yes.
from each other.
Alicia, who are you telling us the story of this week?
The tragedy of Mary Queen of Scots, the woman with the worst taste in men and trust issues out the yin-yang. So many. It has everything. It has plots and true crime adjacent and murders and it's good.
Madness.
How about you?
I have a gentleman named Rupert Murdoch who
I think you mean Scrooge McDuck.
I have a gentleman named Scrooge McDuck. As I'm sure everyone is aware, is a media mogul who has a global media empire and way too much influence and is basically a walking advertisement for antitrust enforcement. But what do I know?
I don't know. Their two quests for power turned out a little differently. Do you think it is based on their assigned gender? I don't know. Like female versus male. I don't know. Very interesting. So two really good stories this week. Before we get into that, y'all, Patreon. When we left you 2 weeks ago, we did really appreciate our break. We've got so much fun stuff coming up for you.
Yep.
And Patreon, we still did all the great stuff over there. What's been happening? I had my June bonus divorce and my July bonus divorce told the story of Stonewall.
Yep. Celebrating the anniversary of Stonewall.
Celebrating the anniversary of Stonewall, where the gay community broke up with the establishment in 1969. We celebrated Independence Day with the trashy divorce of Ed Robertson and Stephen Page of the Bare Naked Ladies.
Gotta go Canadian.
Was amazing.
How do you celebrate America without celebrating Canada?
We've still been dropping stuff on Trashy Tidbits like we do twice a week. We had more royal updates. Pets and Princess Margaret and astrology and Frogmore.
Yep.
We had some presidential prenups, some presidential bar tabs, a little Taylor Swift and Cher too. And we did launch our Easy Peasy Book Club over on Patreon for our $10 patrons. We're their special benefit. We're starting an Easy Peasy Book Club, which is the book club for lazy and smart people.
Yes.
All books are 200 pages or less. Mm-hmm. This month, we're reading The Daughter of Time by Josephine Tay.
Just such a good book. Whether you do the book club or not,
read the book. It's if you're trashy tutor adjacent, it's about the princes in the tower in a really fun way. It's an amazing little mystery novel. Oh, Fun with Donna is coming back this week. Oh, and I have a super good trashy tutors coming as well. I'm going to give you a really good overview on the Hundred Years' War and the War of the Roses. So that backdrop is set for all the Tudor trash candy that we're going to be doing in the coming months. And I have to take a breath because we have so many names.
We have so many names.
We asked, like, hey guys, can you get us to 100? Holy crap.
Yep.
We have 120 patrons on Patreon.
Yep. You take a breath. I will start them out.
Let's start our magic mirror.
Yes. Thank you to Carrie, Charlotte, Rachel Ann, Amanda, Ashley,
Rhea, Claire, Patty, Dana, Kathy,
Catlin, Isabella, Robin, Kate, Jamie,
Kelly, Yvette, Pilar, one of my very favorite names in the whole world, Circa, one of our very favorite people in the whole world.
Indeed.
Jessica.
Also, Jessica.
Two
Jana,
different, two totally Jessicas. Different Jessicas, just back to back.
Thank you both. And Jana, Amber, Jeffrey, Lindsay, and Melanie.
Thank you so much. We hope that you are enjoying all of the fun trash candy that is happening over on Patreon. For y'all who just can't get enough trashy divorces, come on over there. We're dropping, I don't know, 2 to 4 extra hours of bonus content a week that is...
It's us goofing off mostly. Like there's
well researched goofing
off. Oh sure, but it's a little looser than
it's a little looser. And we appreciate all y'all for supporting us over there. Y'all are the very best. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And holy cats, you ready to do this episode?
Yeah, I am. Like
1 billion Scrooge McDuck trash cans.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
Everybody wants to rule the world. Go, go, go.
So, Alicia.
Oh, Stacey.
Who wants to rule the world where you are this
Mary
week?
Queen of Scots wants to rule the world.
Wow, yeah, yeah, yeah. From what I know of that story, she really did want to rule the world, but
it didn't go too great for her. Yeah, denied. Yeah, pretty denied. So, you know that I'm always writing with a dedication. One of our favorite things that happens, at least my favorite thing that happens, is when we get emails to trashy divorces that are like, yeah, I felt really crappy about this bad relationship I had until I heard this podcast. So all y'all.
We do appreciate that.
We do. This one is for all y'all with lousy pickers, because I'm going to make you feel a whole lot better about your choice of picker by talking about Mary Queen of Scots. It's all the bad relationships.
Can you explain the picker thing? Is it just people who pick poorly?
People who pick. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a Southern thing. You got a bad picker. That probably phrasing again. Okay. So today I'm bringing you the bad relationships of Mary Queen of Scots. Technically, the only divorce that happens in this story is between Mary and her head in 1587, but there's a lot that goes on before she kind of seals her whole fate. This story has everything. If you're playing along with trashy divorces, bingo, bad choices in men, captures, escapes, murders, plots of all nefarious things. Mary, just to set the stage, born December 8th, 1942. She's a...
19 when?
Mary is born December 8th, 1542.
Seems more right.
She's a Sagittarius. It's a fire sign. Sagittariuses are known for being open and assertive and a little restless. She's a believer in honesty, being the best policy, but Sagittariuses often have a very frank and blunt way of communicating. Boy, that turtleneck really hides your double chin. You look great in it. Like, that's kind of Sagittarius. In all matters of life, Sagittariuses are assertive and confident. If there's something on your mind, you make sure others know. Restless and varied, hard time settling. Not doing a lot on astrology here, but just want to set the stage that Mary is a fire sign. She's a Sag. Bless her little heart. So Mary is the daughter of James V of Scotland.
Okay.
King of Scotland. And his second wife, Mary of Guise. Now.
Of Guise?
Of Guise.
Of Guise?
Yes, Mary of Guise. Mary of Guise, G-U-I-S-E. This is one of the Franche territories that we learned about in Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what you have to know, is that Mary, Queen of Scots, who will be Queen of Scots when she is 6 days old because her dad dies when she's 6 days old, Mary is the daughter of Margaret Tudor, who is Henry VIII's sister. Okay. This makes Mary the great-granddaughter of Henry VII.
Okay.
She's, what does this mean? She's in line for the English throne. She's not at the top of the list, because at this point, when she's born in 1542, Henry VIII has 3 kids, Mary, Elizabeth, and Edward. She's not super high on the list, but she's on the list along with her cousins, Jane Grey, Catherine Grey, who are all the granddaughters of Mary Tudor, Henry's other sister. Like, okay. You remember the Tudors just kill everybody off.
Right, right.
Is, okay. Mary is born and raised way Roman Catholic. This is going to be important remember.
Yeah, it will.
All the way through the story, because religion is going to cause some problems.
Sure.
16th century Europe.
Yeah.
Bad scene. Mary's life kind of starts out rough. Her daddy dies when she's 6 days old, and now she's Queen of Scotland. She is coronated as Queen of Scotland at 9 months old. And being a girl, her value is what? Being marrying material.
Yeah.
Already a hot commodity on the European marriage market.
Just right out of the womb.
Right out of the womb.
Are already making plans for that.
That's it.
But, well, it's about, I was going to say, when you said, you know, value of a girl, I was going to say nothing, but obviously no.
No, she's a hot commodity.
Very valuable.
On the European marriage market. And Henry VIII wants her for Edward. France wants her. Like, Scotland's kind of a...
Yeah.
I mean, it's backwater, but it's a prize in the crown just for the land of the proximity to England. When she's five, it has been decided that she will be a French queen. So her mama, Mary of Guise, ships her off to France to be raised in the French court alongside her fiancé, François, the Dauphin of France. Not the Dolphin, the Dauphin of France.
Dauphin.
The Dauphin, who is the son of Henry II and Catherine Medici.
Okay, gotta interrupt though, because
yeah,
the French have their dauphins. The English have the Prince of Wales. They all have sea armies, right?
No. Doesn't happen until 1588 in the Spanish Armada when that comes in.
Okay.
So besides just being a queen of Scotland and heir to the English throne, Mary is also on her other side a granddaughter of Claude, Duke of Guise, who is an influential figure in the court of France. So her being betrothed to the Dauphin secures this Catholic alliance between France and Scotland.
Okay.
Mary of Guise and all of Mary's uncles are in charge of Scotland now. So she's in France. Baby kid. Described as charming, sweet, lovely, like she's the perfect child. She does have four ladies in waiting that are going to be known throughout Europe for her entire life as the Four Marys. Mary Seton, Mary Fleming, Mary Livingston, and Mary Beaton. Hmm. They're like her fucking Spice Girls.
Okay.
She's got Mary and her Four Marys.
Okay.
I'm thinking about covering the Four Marys this week on Trashy Tidbits because it's just a fun story. But sure, these women stay with Mary.
They should be the opening act for Six.
That's the exactly musical. The Four Marys. There's your spinoff for Six the Musical. These Marys stay with Mary. It's all so confusing throughout most of her life and are almost just as legendary. So Mary is growing up and being educated at the French court, which is the most regal, polished, fanciest court in the land. Very different from backwater Scotland,
yeah,
which she doesn't really remember at all. Let's talk about Mary's first husband.
Okay.
François.
François.
Old Frankie, the Dauphin.
Okay.
He is a tiny kid. He is a sickly kid. But they are brought up together totally.
I feel like this is a common story with French nobles.
Well,
was it the hemophilia?
He has got some things. Well, here's the thing. Henry II and Catherine de' Medici did not have kids for 10 years. Like, this was an arranged marriage. We're going to hear a little bit. Okay, hold on. By all accounts, François, little Frankie, adores her and Mary mothers Frankie, which is probably good because his mom is kind of nasty.
Okay.
Catherine de' Medici loves her husband. She loves power more. Henry II does not love her. He has a mistress, Diane de Poitiers. Catherine is involved in a lot of power plays, some occult stuff. She's a big supporter of Nostradamus.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Just little bit players in the stories we tell.
It's so much fun. And as mother-in-laws go, like in Eleanor of Aquitaine, we heard about Matilda and Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
Add Catherine de' Medici up there with mother-in-laws from hell. Because she does not like Mary.
Right.
She's like the only person in the court that does not like Mary. But no matter. Mary cements this alliance and Catherine de' Medici is all business. So on April 24th, 1558, Mary and François are married at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. This is a coup for France. She has signed over her claim to Scotland to François. With children, now they rule not just France, but Scotland and England too. Like, there's this thing with French and England. They're always claiming that they're the king or the other one.
Right.
This is a huge power play. But Frankie has undescended testicles and he's a little sickly. And no children come from the marriage, although Mary does end up being Queen of France for like a hot minute.
Okay.
In 1559, like a year later, Henry II is injured in a jousting accident.
Really?
Joust for life, yo. Can't make
good
it up.
Good Lord.
A spear pierces through his visor into his eye and an infection sets into his brain. He lingers on for like a week and a half.
What a way to go. Ugh.
But does die from his injury on July 10th. And now François and Mary are King and Queen of France.
But what the hell?
Dude, hold on. Like, this story is, you don't even know. But that doesn't last terribly long either. Nobody is really sure what illness takes Francois down.
Jesus.
Ear condition, meningitis, mastitis.
It seriously could have been anything at the time.
All of it's bad, but Francois dies after 17 months on the throne, December 5th, 1560. Happy 18th birthday to Mary. She is a widow at 18. She's about to turn 18, and she's been the Queen of France, and now she's a widow. Husband number one,
boom.
Dead.
Yeah.
Okay. God. Mary sticks around France for a while, kind of trying to find her footing, but Catherine de' Medici is like, oh, fuck no. This isn't going to happen. I don't want you anywhere in this because it takes away my ability to regent for the next son.
Right.
In June of 1561, Mary's mother, Mary of Guise, dies.
May I ask, what is the status of Scotland?
I'm about to tell you. Okay. So for all this time, Mary of Guise has been taking care of Scotland along with James V's illegitimate son. Okay. So all of her uncle lords, her illegitimate half-brother, and her mom have been handling Scotland.
Right, caretakers.
That's right. But by the summer of 1561, Mary is coming on back to Scotland to see what her next adventure is going to be. Her mom, in June of 1561, Mary of Guise dies. So now Mary, Queen of Scots, is actually going to become Queen of Scots, heads on back to Scotland in the summer, 1561. Now, her half-brother has been regent, and along comes Mary, and he kind of gets booted, and he's holding a few grudges, because as she's coming over, he's like, yeah, she can be the figurehead, and I'll run it, which was a great imaginary idea in his brain, but it's not going to happen, because he doesn't know Mary. So Mary's back over, ruling Scotland for a while, and this really shakes the place up. Her uncles and her half-brother are like, hey, we liked it a lot better before you came back. We are a firmly Protestant country, and you cannot just waltz back in here with all your Catholic nonsense, which she does. And it rolls like this for a while. But let's just take a quick accounting. Mary is hot, like beautiful hot, Wonder Woman hot. She is 5'11", which is unheard of for a woman in those days. She has long auburn hair. She is beautiful, and she likes to hunt and play with the best of them. She is charming and magnetic and has that thing where if she's talking to you, you are the only person in the room. She is mesmerizing. And again, on the marriage market. Okay.
The Elizabeth Taylor of her day.
Kind of it. So let's take account for what's happening in England right now, because they've had a rough time of it. Henry VIII has died. So has his son Edward. So has Bloody Mary. And Elizabeth assumes the throne in 1558. There are now two queens. They're cousins. Oh, my sweet sister. They play this game of letters. Mary is totally a threat to Elizabeth.
Right.
Who has said she will never marry. Because Elizabeth knows her value is not in getting married and handing her power over. So by the time Lady Jane Grey gets knocked off in the mid-1550s, Mary really is heir to the English throne, period. There's nobody left around. England is Protestant now, too. And a lot of people in England still think Elizabeth is a bastard and doesn't really have a claim to the throne anyway. Two queens.
Because she's Anne Boleyn's daughter.
Correct.
And they didn't recognize the validity of the divorce.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. I'm learning. I learn things, Alicia.
Dude, trashy divorces. You want to pass your AP history class?
No kidding.
This is what you listen
no
to.
No kidding.
Okay.
Sorry for the F-bomb.
Sorry. So two queens, rival countries, are playing this passive-aggressive game with each other because Elizabeth is really concerned about what Mary's going to do next. She is beautiful and charming and in her early 20s and ripe to make another alliance. And Elizabeth is so fucking crazy about this. By 1564, she starts giving her pony boy, Robert Dudley, titles, Earl of Leicester, and tries to promote him on to Mary. To, hey, why don't Mary and Robert, you guys marrying, so that way you'll be totally allegiant to me. Poor pony boy. Like, we covered his story on Patreon, and it's good. Check it out if you want to hear that trash. But Mary's like, no fucking way. Am I going to marry your pony boy, Elizabeth? He's super Protestant and maybe killed his wife and is your lover. So fuck right off.
That is like three strikes.
Right? But Mary has her sights set on someone else. And oh, this is just going to go all kinds of bad. Like, sideways doesn't even begin to cut it here. Mary falls in love, head over heels in love, with this ass face named Henry Stewart. Lord Darnley.
Wait, Henry Stewart?
Henry Stewart.
Okay.
This is the beginning of the Stuart lineage. Like, hang tight, but Lord Darnley. Think Joffrey from Game of Thrones.
Oh, good.
Okay,
good,
so good. Through the courtship, he's charming and dashing and wonderful, and Mary has, like, fucking flipped over him. She is filled with lust and is like a schoolgirl, like, writing Mrs. Darnley on her notebooks. Like, it is middle school ridiculous. Because who has she had? Francois? A sickly little kid? And, like... Mary says that Lord Darnley is the best proportioned long man she's ever seen. So gross. And he loves it, and he's eating it up because he can't wait to be the King of Scotland.
Sure.
Okay.
And possibly England.
Let's talk about Lord Darnley for a second. This is going to get confusing, but I've tried to make it as simple as I can. His mother is a woman named Margaret Douglas, who is also Mary's aunt. Margaret Douglas is the daughter of Margaret Tudor, okay? Henry VIII's sister. So Margaret Douglas is the half-sister of James V, the dead king. Are you with me? Okay.
Let's say that I am.
So Margaret Douglas is technically the heir to the English throne too, even though she's in Scotland.
Oh, I see.
Okay. She and James V, the dead king of Scotland, they have the same mom but different dads. So what does that mean? It means that Lord Darnley is right in line after Mary for the English throne. And now they're going to double up on the Scottish stage. And now Elizabeth is really starting to panic. Like, she does not give permission for this. Like, this is in no way.
Right.
What the fuck? You guys can't double up on me. But Margaret Douglas has very big plans for her son, and she is not afraid to steer him in a way which he can manifest her plans of greatness. She's the daughter of a queen. Margaret Tudor, in her own right, was Queen of Scotland. Like, she's got plans that everybody wants to rule the world in this story.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeez. Mary does marry Henry Stewart, Lord Darnley, in July.
Despite not getting Elizabeth's permission?
Oh, didn't get her permission? They're fucking cousins. They're not even, like, their consanguinity is so close, they do not have papal dispensation. They get married before papal dispensation comes because she's so lusty about him. Okay. And this is the bad part, because I've known people like this. You meet somebody, they charm your little socks off, you get married, and the next day you wake up and they are a totally different person. Lord Darnley.
And I'm guessing not in a good way.
No, no. Once married, Lord Darnley is mean and violent and an angry drunk and just doesn't understand why Mary won't, like, crown him king and just let him be in charge of the country. And he's pouting and mad, and he's a cheater. He's going to male brothels a lot.
Wow.
And Mary's like, what the fuck have I done?
Did not know there were male brothels back then. Good on them. Look at history drawing up the human experience.
So Darnley's kind of rebuffed. He is, like, pretty much set to the side and consumed by jealousy. And it's announced that Mary, is pregnant. Rumors circulate around the court that Darnley is not the father. The child's real father is this man named David Rizzio, who...
What, just introduced some Italian guy?
He's an Italian guy.
Oh, is he?
He's an Italian courtier who has now become Mary's private secretary. Because Mary has shit instincts with who to trust. Just shit instincts. David Rizzio, Mary's private secretary.
God, he must be so unhappy in Scotland, though. Can you imagine?
He's Mary's private secretary. He's doing great until March 9th.
Just thinking weather-wise.
1566. When he and Mary are privately having sup in her apartments.
Is that a code?
Supper. They're so supping.
I know.
They're supping. And set the stage. Mary's 6 months pregnant. And in comes a whole gang of people, which proceed to murder David Rizzio, stab him 56 times in front of Mary.
Whoa.
Yeah. This is March 9th, 1566.
Whoa.
They've been married a few months. Like, yeah, 56 times. There's a true crime adjacent.
Wow. And this is Lord Danley's peeps coming in to defend his honor or whatever?
Okay. Yep, yep. Darnley is thought to be behind the plot. Like, Mary's just having dinner with her four Marys and Rizzio, and Darnley comes in and accuses his wife of adultery and has this group of knaves murder David, who was hiding behind Mary. Mary's held at gunpoint while this happens. Rizzio's stabbed numerous times, like 56 times. 17 people are listed in connection with Rizzio's murder.
Jesus.
On March 21st, Mary has Darnley declared innocent of the murder.
Okay, well.
Bad, bad taste. So Mary does give birth June 19th, 1566, to James. Sweet baby James. Lord Darnley does not attend his baptism.
Yikes.
It's clear when the baby comes out, the baby does not belong to David Rizzio. David is described as the ugliest man in Europe. Like, he's not a looker, but he's very loyal to Mary and now dead.
But okay. you're saying it's clear the baby was not his.
It's not his.
Okay.
Okay. So baby's born.
Mm-hmm.
Rizzio's dead. Darnley is still a problem. And Mary's pissed. She's really pissed. And she wants to be rid of Darnley. And she knows he is also plotting to overthrow her to make his claim on Scotland and England. So she goes to her senior counsel like, hey, you guys, what are the chances I can get a trashy divorce here? I know that Darnley and I are cousins and we may have broken some consanguinity things. And her advisors are like, you got to have an annulment if you want to do this. But that puts sweet baby James and his legitimacy and his claims for in question. So what's the alternative? Divorce isn't going to stop Darnley's ass face planning to overthrow you.
Right.
So
he's still got a claim. Yeah.
Maybe let's kill Darnley.
That does seem like the most reasonable.
Murder has to be a better option.
Well, he's already marched into her room and murdered a guy in front of her. Seems like we know how this game is played now.
Mary's kind of see no evil, hear no evil. I don't know anything about this. But yeah, let's go ahead and kill Darnley. Okay. So there's this dude named James Hepburn. Bothwell. He's the Earl of Bothwell is his title. And we're just going to call him that from now on. The council recruits Bothwell to do this. And Bothwell has known Mary. He was one of her suitors back after Francois died. He was allegiant to Mary of Guise. He's a family friend, blah, blah, blah.
So this is literally like her cabinet basically is interviewing assassins.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, it's government was different than I hope.
So Lord Darnley, bless his poor little penis, gets syphilis.
Ooh.
And he heads off to this place called Kirkofield to recuperate.
Sure.
And everybody's scheming. Her senior counsel, Mary Bothwell. And let's go ahead and interject old William Cecil from England, Elizabeth's Secretary of State and senior advisor. He knows how dangerous Mary is to Elizabeth, and he is 100% in for the murder plan. He knows about it. He supports it. There are plots all over the place.
That first guy doesn't get it done. He will.
I mean, well, he does.
Oh, great.
He does.
Cheers.
In 1587.
To William Cecil.
Just takes him a little bit longer. Well, right. He's fresh off killing Amy Robsart.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, it's not his first killing.
But there are plots all over the place. And not only some of Mary's senior counselors are trying to get rid of Darnley, they may be trying to get rid of Mary as well, too. Because, right, her Scottish uncle lords, her half-brother, everybody's like, fuck, you've just fucked it up. So if we can clear out Darnley, get you and Bothwell incriminated, like, there's a lot of plotting happening.
Yeah.
And
again, it's a place with bad weather, and so you have a lot of time to sit around scheming.
But she has a son now. There's a legitimate heir to the throne. a son. So now they have a king. They can get rid of their dorky queen, their wacky Catholic queen, get right. her out of the way, and raise him Protestant.
And make him president. Kidding.
The plan does not go that great. February 10th, 1567. Y'all, they have been married less than 2 years. And the plot is to murder him by gunpowder. I can't. The conspirators...
Not by shooting him with a...
No.
With a...
Conspirators fill his room with gunpowder.
So the Guy Fawkes approach to assassinating
this
guy.
Was... Let's see how this works for Guy Fawkes and give him some tips in 1605. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So the conspirators fill his room with gunpowder, and Darnley's like, what the fuck? Climbs out his window in a nightshirt and ends up getting strangled with one of his men, like, in the courtyard. Dead. Husband number two, done.
Okay.
It's not even crazy yet.
Oh, hold okay. on.
Here's where it gets crazy. April 12th, 1567 is Bothwell's trial, which lasts all of 7 hours. He's acquitted. Now, let me give you a little bit of the deets on Bothwell. He's married right now, April 12th, to this lady named Lady Jean Gordon. He's only been married like a year, but divorce proceedings are already underway, citing his adultery with her servant, Bessie Crawford.
Yikes.
Their divorce will be granted May 7th, 1567. But hold on. These are a few big months for old Bothwell. He's killed Lord Darnley. He's getting a divorce. 2 weeks later, after his trial, April 24th, he shows up with 800 men to rescue Mary, or I'm doing quotes, kidnap Mary.
Kidnap is the word I've heard.
Or take her to safety. She goes with him.
Mm-hmm. 800 men.
Once at Dunbar Castle, he allegedly rapes her, which maybe, but maybe not. This is very hotly contested.
Sure.
But now that I have succumbed and been soiled by this man, I have no choice but to marry him. So she's his prisoner all the way through. Hold on.
And wife.
No, all the way. He's not divorced yet.
Oh.
She's his prisoner for another 2 weeks until May 7th when his divorce comes through. And by May 12th, she's vesting him with titles. And sure the fuck enough, May 15th, they marry at Holyrood.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
This sets Scotland into a rage. Like, Scotland is like...
I would think.
Oh, my God, Mary, what have you done?
Yeah.
Sides are chosen, and seriously, we just got her out of the worst situation ever, and she heads barrel first into another shit show. What is wrong with this girl? So the showdown happens June 16th, a month after the wedding. 1 month. The Scottish nobles are coming for Bothwell. He kisses Mary and rides the fuck off in the sunset, never to see her again. No one is is chasing him too hard initially, because if they capture him in Scotland, the whole dirty plot comes out. You've got 300 co-conspirators who all have one little tiny dirty part of this plan. So husband number three, gone. He is captured on his international flight to safety path and is imprisoned in Dragsholm Castle outside of Copenhagen, becomes insane, and lives until 1578, where he dies.
Okay. In a castle in Copenhagen, insane. Uh-huh. Okay.
Now, this same night that Bothwell kisses and rides off into the, I'm going to go insane in a Copenhagen castle sunset.
Denmarkian end.
All of the lords take Mary and imprison her in Lochleven Castle, which literally is a castle that sits in the middle of an island, okay? So in the third week of July, so like a month later, she miscarries twins.
Oh, God.
Bothwell's twins.
Yeah, well, clearly, yeah.
This happens like somewhere between July 20th, July 23rd. On July 24th, think about the last 2 years of her life. This is boom, 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 boom. July 24th, she is forced to abdicate her crown and turn it over to sweet baby James. Some say she was threatened at knife point. She signs it over, and now she's stuck at Lochleven Castle in the middle of an island. There's no escape. But never let Mary fool you, because she has some charm. She's captured and ends up charming her way off that fucking island by May of 1568 and raises an army of like 6,000 men. And she needs to get the fuck out of Scotland. Done. But where to go?
Yeah.
She's got two choices.
Fair question.
England or France.
Denmark, obviously.
No. France, in the long run, probably would have kept her alive if she had gone to France and just laid low. But instead, she heads on down to England, thinking certainly her sweet sister and cousin Elizabeth, who they have written letters, which are all very passive aggressive, and of course I support you, and
sure,
blah, 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 blah. Elizabeth is going to welcome her and give her safety and compassion and all those things.
Mm. Is that what happened?
Elizabeth locks her up for like the next 19 years.
19 years. Yep. Okay. But
hold on. Okay. So when I say locked up, I mean, she's queen, right?
Yeah. She's an aristocrat. So
she has ladies. She has a household staff. Mm-hmm. She has a jailer whose wife is Bess of Hardwick, which is a trashy tutor's in the making. She stays with George Talbot and Bess for like 15 years and great comfort. Pretty much breaking financially George Talbot and Bess of Hardwick, but okay. It's 15 years in when she changes jailers that the trouble really begins, because there have been plots for years and years and years because she just can't stay out of the thick of it.
Right.
Elizabeth and Mary never do meet. They never meet.
Wow.
Their whole lives. And all Mary wants is to meet. Certainly, if Elizabeth meets me and sees how gracious and charming and wonderful I am and that I'm not a threat, even though I want to rule the world. Okay. But William Cecil is interfering and maybe sets her up in this thing called the Babington Plot, where he and Walsingham, his little Secret Service guy, are trying to set Mary up to be taken down, which they do. And once sweet baby James is actually grown, she's still writing to him, "I'm your mother," you know, and he's like, once he turns 18 and fully assumes and is starting to do his thing and his uncles are taking a back seat, he's like, "Mom, I'm not coming to save you.
Yeah, you're safe.
You're a wacky Catholic queen.
Yeah.
We're done."
Yeah.
Mary's devastated. By 1586, Mary is really in the thick of it and is discovered plotting to assassinate Elizabeth.
Yeah. That's her downfall. It wasn't that she just couldn't.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
Couldn't keep well enough alone.
So she's implicated in August of that year. She's found guilty in October, sentenced to death. By February 1st, Elizabeth does sign her death warrant, and Cecil has, for 20 years, woken up every day with one thought in his head. Mary, Queen of Scots, has to die. Mary, Queen of Scots, has to die. As soon as Elizabeth's ink is on that death warrant, Cecil is chomping at the bit to kill her, which he does. She is beheaded badly at Fotheringay Castle on February 8th, 1587. This goes bad. The first blow misses her. It's badly executed.
Whoa.
And it takes a few chops. And when it's done, the executioner holds her head up when the dirty deed is done and finds out all of her lovely auburn hair is really just a wig.
I'd heard about that.
Like, the whole thing is a mess. And now Mary is made out to be a Catholic martyr. And that is the end of Mary, Queen of Scots. Terrible taste in men, listening to the wrong people, trusting, and so stupid all at the same time. Her son does succeed Elizabeth upon her death in 1603 and assumes the throne of Scotland and England. So he is James VI in Scotland. Now he's James I in England. He's the rightful heir, which effectively ends the Tudor dynasty and begins the Stuart dynasty for a united England and Scotland. There's so much more to that story, but through the lens of trashy divorces, we have a death, a murder, and a ride off in the sunset.
Madness.
And a beheading. That's the story of Mary, Queen of Scots.
Man.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we don't live back then.
Mary. So maybe you feel better about your terrible taste in your pickers now. Mary did it worse. God bless her. I'm so conflicted. I have a hard time with Mary because I love her. And then I'm like, God, why are you so stupid all the time?
Some people are.
Anyway, that's a trashy love, divorce, murder arc.
Yeah.
Mary Queen of Scots.
It's a really good story. The hotly disputed kidnapping / arranged her own kidnapping with her boyfriend.
It's tricky, right?
It's so fascinating because, you know, one of those things is a horrific crime and the other is still sort of a horrific crime for a ruler to do. Like,
there's four more hours I can talk about with the lords and the plots and how it all, but
sure. Sure.
That's the shakedown.
Yeah.
That's the shakedown. Whew. Mary Queen of Scots.
All right.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Stay tuned for an important announcement, indeed, especially if you live in Atlanta
or near an airport.
We'll be back with another story of ruling the world.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Trash Pandas. When you need a brain break from your day, let me recommend the game June's Journey for Android and iPhone. It's a hidden object mystery game where you are solving a murder, uncovering family secrets, and, I don't know, exposing official corruption? All in an extremely stylish 1920s setting. Every scene takes you deeper into the mystery and introduces you to an expansive cast of characters as June Parker explores the questions surrounding her sister's apparent murder-suicide at the family's beachfront estate. Add your own elements to the island, from lush gardens to gorgeous new buildings. This story has so many twists and turns. Right now, we are on a global journey attempting to rescue June's niece, Virginia. It's a great combo of gameplay. It's a memory puzzle, a design project, an intriguing storyline with genuinely fabulous art. When you want to let your mind wander, relax into this glorious 1920s murder mystery and get lost in the fun. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
So, Stacey, my Trashy Divorces profile for the week did not do so great with ruling the world, but I think your profile this week succeeded a little better.
Yeah.
Bad at marriage.
Oh, terrible at marriage.
What you got?
Terrible at marriage. A gentleman you may have heard of by the name of Rupert Murdoch. Ugh. Who founded what is now News Corp.
Sure.
Owner of many, many things, including Fox News.
I think he owns the world. Is that right?
He's probably, I mean, there's a strong case to be made that he is the most powerful person on earth. Like, he breaks governments when they upset him.
So the most powerful and vindictive person on, Lord Donnelly.
Yeah. He's, okay. I mean, he's, weirdly though, as we will see, he also has this like, charming depth of warmth.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this story.
This guy is upsetting.
Talk to me.
I would love to tell you a funny story about media mogul and News Corp chief Rupert Murdoch, but his story and its effects on the world, it's not particularly funny. Sorry. He's been married 4 times, divorced 3, and his last wife, his third wife, Wendy Deng, is widely believed to be a spy.
Dang.
I mean, it's like, dang.
We're not saying that she is a Chinese spy.
She's widely believed to be a spy. Not by us, just
some
by
people.
Some
people might say. I can't wait to hear the story.
So Rupert Murdoch's life is a wild story, but it's not funny. Okay, let's get into it.
It's perfect for a comedy podcast.
I know,
let's go.
Right? I know. As I was writing this, I was like, damn it, it's not. Keith Rupert Murdoch was born March 11th, 1931 in Melbourne, Australia.
It's a Pisces.
The son of a newspaper man, also named Keith Murdoch.
That's original.
His father had been a war correspondent during World War I, and he built the template that Rupert would just run with. So in 1920, Dad's a big shot Australian correspondent in London. He is offered the editorship of the Melbourne Herald and comes home to Australia.
Melbourne. Hi, Aussies.
Hey, Aussies. I hope I get this right for you. In 1926, he begins buying up other newspapers and then radio stations. He ends up buying all 3 local newspapers in the city of Adelaide. So suddenly, he's a monopolist.
Wow.
So yeah, by the mid-30s, he steered the Herald into radio as well. I think they were invested in like 11 radio stations across Australia. He was really into like new technologies and how he could use them.
Okay.
For his own enrichment.
Sure.
Personal gain. And he starts involving his papers in politics, which...
Goody.
I mean, when you buy ink by the barrel, it's hard to resist the temptation, I guess.
Fake news.
It should be noted that even then, in the mid-30s, there were serious concerns about the type of media consolidation that Keith was engaged in, and which his son would supercharge in the digital era. But young Rupert was Keith's son, so he got what he could do with a newspaper and a strong point of view. In 1952, Rupert is 21 years old. He's at Oxford in England when his dad dies of cancer.
No.
So the family is forced to liquidate much of Keith's estate to pay taxes.
Okay.
And this, I think, because one of Murdoch's goals seems to be to use his newspaper power to install governments that will keep taxes low on him.
That's convenient.
His taxes low.
Sure.
So I think maybe dad didn't pay taxes or something.
Okay.
Like, it really seemed to damage the family significantly.
There's a big bill due upon dad's death.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And they have to offload almost everything to pay for it. What they do get to keep are the papers in Adelaide.
Okay.
Which I gather at the time was kind of a provincial backwater. I don't think it was the hotbed.
That it is now.
If it is now. I've never been. Sorry.
I hear Adelaide's lovely.
It's a city on the coast. I mean, it can't be terrible.
Can't be terrible.
Okay. Anyway, Rupert, you know, takes over the Adelaide News and turns it into this big financial success. And he's like, cool, more please. So he starts shopping around for other papers to buy. Soon he is supplying news nearly everywhere in Australia.
Wow.
Yeah. And he applied the same editorial approach to all of his holdings. So they would like boost the sports coverage. They would run with scandal coverage. And they had like zany headlines to make sure that their messaging was driven home. Yeah, he is said to have invented the modern tabloid format.
Like what? You had it. You had a good headline.
It was Headless Body Found in Topless Bar. It's apparently a movie made based on a New York Post headline from the Murdoch era.
If it bleeds, it leads.
That's 1,000% his opinion of things. In 1956, he gets married for the first time, because this podcast is called Trashy Divorces, not History of Media Moguls. So he marries Patricia Booker. She is blonde, she's a department store model, and a flight attendant from Melbourne. According to a piece by Emily Jane Fox in Vanity Fair, Rupert's mother didn't think much of Patricia Booker.
Mother-in-laws, man.
Seriously. Also, Dame Elizabeth, his mother lived to be 103 years old, so...
What?
We're probably stuck with Rupert Murdoch for quite some time.
Holy smokes.
So anyway, they have one child, Prudence, in 1958. The marriage lasts 11 years. Patricia was reportedly unhappy living in Adelaide, which, again, I think it just was not the modern city that it is today.
Okay.
It was just out of the way. They divorce in 1967, and this is the same year that he marries Anna Torv, a young reporter at his Daily Mirror in Sydney.
That's no time at all.
One assumes that perhaps there was a little bit of overlap.
Wow.
In those two relationships. And yes, the actress Anna Torv, best known as Agent Olivia Dunham on Fringe, is the niece of that Anna Torv.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Huh. True crime warning. And this is real. Like, this really happened. And it's such a crazy story. 1969, 2 years into their marriage. Terrifying tragedy. So the Murdochs were living in England. He had started buying up British papers. And one of Rupert's executives was a man named Alec McKay. Alec and his wife Muriel, I guess they were couples friends with the Murdochs.
Sure.
They're older than the Murdochs are, but
okay.
In any case, the Murdochs went home to Australia for Christmas. And while they were gone, they were like, hey, Alec and Muriel, like, use our Rolls Royce. Have fun. Like, tool around town. So on December 29th, two men followed the Rolls Royce to the McKay home and abducted Muriel, thinking she was Anna Murdoch.
Oh, no.
They had a ransom plan that played out horrifically over a period of several weeks that followed. Specifically, they demanded a £1 million ransom. It's not clear how quickly the kidnappers realized they had the wrong person, but, I mean, this sounds so horrible. They contacted Alec 18 times before they were caught. They were sending him letters that Muriel had written to prove that she was still alive.
Like, sure.
So they try to, like, arrange a payoff, right? He's going to drop the money somewhere. They're going to pick it up. The first place, this is in London. The first place just coincidentally is full of cops. So like it.
Bobbies.
Sorry. So it doesn't work. So they try again a second time. Nosy neighbors are like, oh my God, there are suitcases in a phone box. Police. This is unusual.
If you see something, say something.
Well, and I guess the trouble, like, this is the start of 1970, and I think the Troubles were just getting going at the time.
Oh, so, IRA is, yeah.
So
I think Louis Mountbatten, yeah. Yeah.
Surveillance at the second site, despite the nosy neighbors, had recorded a blue Volvo pass slowly by the phone box several times. This was traced to two brothers, Niamadeen and Arthur Hossein. The pair were broke after buying an 11-acre farm where they were raising pigs and chickens. Police raided the place the next day. They found various things that were very important, including a notebook with torn pages that matched all of those letters that got sent.
Oh.
And, of course, their fingerprints matched the fingerprints on the letters.
Sure. And what, Mariel's rescued, right?
What they never found was any sign of Mariel McKay.
Oh.
It is assumed that they murdered her at some point and fed her body to the pigs. God. They spent weeks searching, and they never found anything.
All I can think about is that Criminal Minds episode where, God, that's the worst one ever, where they, oh, God, poor Mariel.
Yes.
Poor Mariel.
That's exactly right. So even without...
Just for knowing the Murdochs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes.
Even without a body, they were convicted of Muriel's kidnapping and murder and served 20 years in prison for the crime. Anna, who they thought they were kidnapping, was 25 years old.
She rightfully freaked the fuck out. Yeah.
Wouldn't you? I mean, there would not be enough Xanax for me to ever be right. Again, the marriage persisted, though. What does not kill us and our assistant makes us stronger? I don't know. There's your true crime interlude in the Lives and Loves.
You rarely dip your toe into true crime.
I really do. I was shocked to see that. So that blew me away.
There are more similarities than I knew in this.
Mm-hmm.
You got plots and mother-in-laws.
Okay. So back to Rupert's business, which, you know, he is all in. He's in Australia. He's in New Zealand. He's in England. So this marriage to Anna, she is so smart. She is so on, like, she literally sits on the board of his company, but, like, she is so on board with his vision. They just fire on all cylinders. They click hard. And so, and she is integral to, she is like his loyal supporter at all turns while he's buying up, like, respected newspapers and turning them into trashy tabloids, right? Like,
okay. But she's on board. She's dedicated.
Yeah.
Devoted wife.
But he's not, like, a popular guy because people's hometown newspapers are getting turned into garbage. In England, he's hated.
Oh.
They call him, like, the dirty digger because his papers are obsessed with people's private
trash
stuff. Yeah. He buys New Zealand's The Dominion. He launches Australia's first national daily newspaper, The Australian. In 68, he grabs the British tabloid News of the World, gets The Sun a year later, and when he hired an editor for The Sun, he explained, "I want a tearaway paper with a lot of tits in it."
Oh, he's a classy guy.
He's a classy guy.
Classy.
72, he buys Sydney's The Daily Telegraph. 73, he purchases some papers in Texas, and the next year he moves to New York City. He founds the U.S. supermarket tabloid Star, and in 76, he buys the New York Post.
Mm.
Let's talk about the New York Post, because there's a tie-in to one of your favorite...
Oh, I know. I love it.
The founder without a father.
Sorry. I think you mean Rupert Murdoch ruined the New York Post.
I mean, it could be argued. This paper was founded by Alexander Hamilton in 1801 and had been a respected big city paper that generally promoted high-minded liberal values throughout most of its history.
Who lives, who dies, who tells your story?
It was also a profitable paper for most of its history, something that has never been true under Murdoch's leadership. The Post is now super trashy, sports a decidedly conservative editorial slant, and apparently loses tens of millions of dollars a year, with some estimates as high as $110 million a year.
That's a lot of smackaroos.
A lot of smackaroos to just let float away. But I mean, you know, he's got like Fox News pulls in billions a year, so he's got it.
Yeah.
So in the 80s, into the 80s, he's still gobbling up newspapers, but he also starts investing in satellite television and even entertainment. He buys a 50% stake in 20th Century Fox in 84. He wanted into the U.S. television market, but there was one problem.
What's that?
Under the law at the time, a foreign national could only own up to a 20% stake in a television station.
Really?
So Rupert Murdoch is like, fuck it, I'm an American now, and naturalizes.
Oh.
He's just like, yeah, I can't get as rich as I want to be as an Australian, so fuck Australia.
Sweet Jesus, the hypocrisy in this story is so strong.
Yeah, so 1985, Rupee is an American now, buys up a network of independent television stations, and this forms the nucleus for Fox Broadcasting, which will soon bring to the world The Simpsons and other good shows. So,
now, I'm not going to diss on The Simpsons. I'm not it's either. A good show.
X-Files was on Fox. Okay.
Fringe was on Fox.
Fringe was on Fox.
Yeah.
All through this, at his side, was Anna, raising their three children, Elizabeth, Lachlan, and James, as well as Prudence, who lived with them as well.
Daughter from the first marriage.
Daughter from the first marriage. Okay. Which I found that interesting, too, that he apparently, like, took custody seriously of his daughter. You know, like, a lot of men at that time would not have, but he did. So, good for him.
Not sure how great her mom was in that. I think she...
I got that impression, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. But as the years went by, Anna was growing weary of not really having, like, a fixed address. Did they live in Aspen? Did they live in New York?
Are they American? Are they Australian? Yeah. Are they English? Who knows?
What the hell? And she, of course, had to try to fill the long stretches of time while Rupert was away on business. She took up the cello.
Good for her.
Didn't really suit her.
No.
She went back to school. She got a degree from NYU.
Oh, wow.
And then she wrote novels. She's written three novels, which were very well received.
Holy cap.
She was hoping, as the years went by, I mean, they were married for 31 years. She was like,
wow.
Rupert, why don't we go hang out on our 155-foot yacht, drink champagne.
And enjoy the good life.
Throw a fucking line in the water or something.
Let's
like,
be done, yeah.
Have friends over. You can wear shorts. I mean, like, consider what they had built. Like, by 1997, Rupert has been a huge player in British politics for decades. And Tony Blair's New Labour was campaigning for in the election that year.
Okay.
The Conservatives had been in power for 18 years. They were just done. And Murdoch sensed, like, he knew Tony Blair. He sensed, like, I can work with this guy, right? Rupert switches parties. He'd been a big Thatcherite. He sees a chance to turn the Labour Party into a kind of more conservative, free market kind of vehicle.
Okay.
So he backs Blair and New Labour, and they win in a landslide.
I won in a landslide.
So Blair becomes prime minister. During the Blair years, Murdoch was described as an unofficial cabinet minister, and his influence was such that people say that Blair and Murdoch ran Britain for a decade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like, from Anna's perspective, they have enough. They have more than enough. They are billionaires. They can make and break governments. They have a brood of adept children, and they're getting older.
Like, that would be enough. We're good.
Why
wear
not,
shorts.
Why not relax? Go to brunch. Why not relax and enjoy it?
I love it that we're so middle-aged that, like, brunch is the biggest deal. Like, let's go to brunch.
All right. Instead, in the late 90s... Rupert's eyes gradually turned to the Chinese market. He couched his interest in the language of free markets and crushing autocracies, but everyone knew it was really about the billion pairs of untapped eyeballs and the ad dollars they could generate.
Mm.
He bought a stake in an Asian satellite broadcast network and started planning his invasion of mainland China.
Wow.
In the process, Rupert meets an employee of that satellite network named Wendy Deng.
Dang.
And an affair commenced, as it would.
Oh.
In April of 98, Rupert leaves Anna.
What does Anna have to say about this?
It was a complete shock to her, and one that she put entirely at the feet of Rupert and Wendy. And, like, she's only done, I think this is the only interview she's given after this.
Okay.
2001, the Australian Women's Weekly. She says, I think that they're like, so what ended the marriage? And she's like, I think that Rupert's affair with Wendy Deng, it's not an original plot.
Hey, she has a degree from NYU. She's a good communicator.
Was the end of the marriage.
Wow.
His determination to continue with that. I thought we had a wonderful, happy marriage. Obviously, we didn't. To make matters worse, Rupert announces this through Liz Smith, the gossip columnist at The Post.
God,
that
really?
He owns. Yeah, she wrote, it is with some personal sadness that I announce the amicable separation of Rupert Murdoch and his beautiful wife, Anna, after 31 years of marriage and three children. The Murdochs say their situation is very painful and leaves them torn, but they are attempting to work out their differences. Mrs. Murdoch, a novelist and philanthropist, will remain on the board and continue in the Murdoch businesses.
Oh, well, that's nice of him.
Yeah, it was also a lie. Not long after, Rupert calls her up and is like, hey, by the way, you're not on the board anymore.
Oh, my God.
You can go to one more meeting. You can say your goodbyes. You're
done.
I
cannot even imagine being, I have dedicated 30 years of my life to your goals, to raising your kids, to doing everything, and you're just going to ditch me on a fucking doorstep?
Yep.
God.
Yep. To make matters worse, her son Lachlan is on the board, so she says her goodbyes, and then Lachlan escorts her out of the building.
Thanks, son.
So this is not the part where Rupert displays weird warmth that is a little
charming.
Yeah,
I'm waiting to hear the warmth part.
Yeah, not there. More weirdness. So Anna is a devout Catholic. She consults Cardinal John O'Connor in New York. Like, she consults a Catholic cardinal about her situation.
Sure.
Who knew Catholics were so pragmatic? The cardinal of the Catholic Church is like, well, you don't have any choice but to divorce him. What? What?
I think he may have missed a lesson in cardinal school.
I mean, good Lord. So I thought that was crazy pants. There was no prenup, apparently. So when the divorce was finalized in June of 99, so over a year later,
okay,
Anna walked away with $1.7 billion. Including
$1.7 billion?
Including $110 million in cold hard cash.
That is a lot of smackaroos.
It is a lot of smackaroos. The settlement also puts her children and Prudence at the front of the line for payouts from News Corp, just in case he should have children with future wives. Anna remarried a few months after the divorce was finalized. And she and husband William Mann, a financier, live in the Hamptons in a home owned by Yasmin Aga Khan. And
really?
I have a feeling I have heard of the Aga Khan people.
Princess Yasmin Aga Khan is the daughter of Prince Ali Khan and Rita Hayworth. She of Gilda fame. Rita Hayworth will be an upcoming subject of a trashy divorce. She was married and divorced 5 times.
Wow.
She married Ali Khan after Orson Welles.
Wow.
Yeah. No, it's a fantastic story. I can't wait to talk about Rita Hayworth. I didn't know. That's interesting that they bought.
Actually, I think they rent
Yasmin Aga Khan's house.
I think they rent her house.
Interesting.
From her. Mm-hmm. What I did see is
six degrees of separation. It's all spider webs in this podcast.
Yeah. What I did see is that Yasmin Aga Khan is really active in Alzheimer's charities.
Do you know why that is?
Because her mother died of Alzheimer's.
That is very true.
Yeah. Okay, back to our story. Rupert Murdoch remarried 17 days after...
17 days?
17 days after the divorce of his 31-year-long marriage was finalized. 17 days.
That's a knife in the heart.
Wife number 3.
Dang.
Wendy Dang is a Chinese national who I think was born into a pretty privileged life there, although by Western standards, that's not saying a lot. And here's why I think that. Both of her parents are engineers, and she has 3 siblings. And China had a 2-and-then-1-child policy for most of the second half of the 20th century, including, like, she was born in 69 or 67 or something. So the fact that there were 4 kids tells me that they were able to...
Given a little cover.
They were able to get something worked out with authorities. They apparently had a bigger apartment than their friends, but they didn't have hot water. No one had hot water in the city that she grew up in.
Wow.
Anyway, so yeah, when I say privileged, I'm not saying she lived an opulent life. It was very spare. It was very Spartan.
But more privileged than her peers and contemporaries.
But, yes, but okay. her friends had it a little bit worse. So Wendy Dang is 37 years younger than Rupert. By all accounts, though, she is an enormously intelligent and driven person. She came to the States in 1988 on a student visa and enrolled at Cal State Northridge, earning a degree in economics, then headed to Yale for an MBA.
Okay.
Little issue along the way, though. So when she got to California, she stayed with a couple named Jake and Joyce Cherry.
But what do you mean stayed with?
So Jake's company had done work in China, and so the family moved there briefly.
Okay. And was she like a foreign exchange student or nanny?
They met her there. And so when she wanted to come to the States, They were like, cool, stay
we'll
with us.
We'll be your host family. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
You know how this is going to go, though, right? By 1990, Jake had left Joyce and married Wendy, who he then sponsored for a green card.
Wow.
Their marriage lasted just a few months longer than it took for that green card to come through.
What?
Yeah. He will not... He talked about it one time to a reporter, and he has never spoken about it since.
Dang.
The boyfriend that she was cheating on him with will not discuss. Like, a friend of his was just like, whatever happened between them broke him. He's broken.
So, oh my God.
Anyway, by the late 90s, Wendy had finished up at Yale and taken a job at News Corp's Hong Kong outfit Star TV. As an example of how talented she is in the workplace, the position that she was offered and accepted was an internship. Within a year, she was a vice president.
Excuse me?
She was in charge of programming for, like, the entire Asia region. Like, it just... say what you will, and I will say some things about Wendy Dang, but she is an incredibly capable person.
Or she had really nasty blackmail pictures on people. We've both been in corporate, and you wonder how people move up the way they do. I'm not saying that's what she did.
Yeah, I have no
I'm just saying that's an awfully quick rise in a corporate structure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
In 1997, she met China-obsessed Rupert Murdoch and began accompanying him on trips as a translator. Obviously, it became much more than that. So when they married, they did it aboard the yacht, Morning Glory.
That Anna wanted to retire onto and let Rupert wear shorts and fish. Jesus.
Charlotte Church sang at the wedding. People marveled at Rupert's rejuvenation under Wendy's care. He took up yoga and started eating healthier. He darkened his hair and bought more casual clothes. They were wildly in love, although it's during this period that some of the more nefarious activities of his business life occur.
Well, this is just a trope.
What does that mean?
Just the comments, like middle-age crisis, marrying a younger woman, I'm coloring my hair.
Yeah, except he was...
dancing on tables.
I guess he was in his late 50s when they married, so... I just
old enough to still feel young.
Yeah, I think of Rupert Murdoch as he's just a very old man. Yeah, obviously he wasn't.
Always been like 90. Yes. Right? Okay. Yes. Like when I think of Rupert Murdoch, I just see Scrooge McDuck, but go ahead. Right? Counting all your gold?
Yeah.
I'm Scrooge McDuck?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I have on pants. Shorts would have been cool, but whatevs.
I mean, counting all your gold and then like if... you know, you, the president, and the White House won't take my phone call, like, launching a years-long campaign against you.
Jeez.
Okay, so, for instance, there was the phone hacking scandal in the United Kingdom, where it was revealed that reporters at Murdoch tabloids had routinely hacked into phones and computers of crime victims, the families of soldiers who died in combat.
You can't do that!
And even victims of the July 7th bombings in 2005.
Oh my God.
So, his tabloid News of the World... shut down entirely. It was not the only outlet that was implicated, but it was the core. There are like 25 people who've been criminally charged in this to date, but probably there will be more.
These are dirty deeds.
These are dirty deeds. And this thing came out in 2011. So the fact that they're still like, yeah, probably, we're probably going to arrest more people.
Oh my God.
This prompted regulators to take a stronger stand on Murdoch companies, which is one reason why Comcast now owns the Sky satellite network that Murdoch used to own.
Huh.
Or owned a lot of. He was going to bid for the rest of it, but UK regulators were like, dude, your companies are shit.
You're full of dirty deeds. Mm-hmm. You can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're an irresponsible corporate entity, and we don't want to let you do that.
Well, at least some country has laws. Good for them.
Yes. On the other hand... Murdoch and his papers were big Brexit backers, so let's not pretend that he won't break your country if he's pissed off. In the U.S., this is the same period where Fox News was essentially a hunting ground for sexual predators like Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly, and the network ultimately paid out tens of millions of dollars, maybe more.
Hundreds of millions? We're never going to know.
To silence accusers. And it can't be known how many careers never happened because women were chased out of... media because they were so abused at the network. All right. So Rupert and Wendy are happily married. They have two daughters. She seems to make it her mission to make Rupert cool, even though, you know, he's just not a cool dude. But soon, Nicole Kidman, Hugh Jackman, Bono, David Geffen, Queen Rania of Jordan.
Wow.
Rania. Okay.
I think I'm acting with confidence on that. I don't know.
Just be confident. Barbara Walters, Vera Wang, Barry Diller. You know, this is their social circle now. Like, Wendy is one of those people. Like, she.
Wow.
Just, she loves people.
In with the jet set.
She becomes close friends with Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner before they have some weird and not quite well-explained role in the White House, you know?
No, they go on vacation together, like for months at a time. It's weird.
Yeah. Wendy is remodeling properties that Rupert owns. She's going clubbing with her fabulous friends. And Rupert heads to bed at whatever time 80-year-olds head to bed. Like, because there's that 37-year age difference. And Rupert is a workaholic. I mean, as always, he is consumed with his work. So it's not exactly clear when rumors of Wendy's infidelity began.
Oh, no.
And it seems...
Dang.
It seems possible to me that he might even have tolerated this for some time.
Older guy, younger woman. Yeah.
But around 2012, there are some prominent names that begin to attach to Wendy Deng in the scuttlebutt of the, you know, Murdoch household staff.
Like who?
Like, for one, Eric Schmidt of Google.
Oh.
He has denied that anything ever happened.
Sure.
For another, Tony Blair.
Jesus, no way.
The former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, who had been close friends with Rupert Murdoch, who had been co-Prime Minister with Rupert Murdoch, who, you know, Rupert Murdoch had the unofficial seat in his cabinet, who, like...
Oh, my God.
Who turned a blind eye. Like, throughout the 2000s, there were numerous instances where like, phone hacking was suspected, attached to Murdoch's tabloids, and the Blair government never did anything.
If you'd just gone fishing with me, I never would have cheated on... Oh, God.
Yeah, so...
Isn't Tony Blair married?
He is. He's been married to his wife since 1980. They have four kids together.
Oh, yeah. My God. This is trashy.
So, yeah. Yeah, Murdoch's longtime friend, political ally who ignored his misconduct in London. According to Vanity Fair, the Blair affair lasted several months at least.
Yikes.
And the Murdoch household staff became fully aware of it because Wendy would invite him to properties Rupert owned.
No.
Staffed by Rupert's people.
No.
And they, you know, they would see Tony walk into the master bedroom and pull the door closed.
Ugly.
Important to note that Tony Blair has strenuously denied
Natch
infidelity. But on June 13th, 2013, believing himself betrayed by his wife and his longtime friend Tony Blair, Rupert files for divorce from Wendy and ends his friendship with Tony, obviously. There had been pre- and post-nuptial agreements in the Murdoch-Deng marriage.
Because he's learned.
So the settlement was private. The day that both of them appeared in court to affirm the settlement to the judge, and the judge, you know, and you recognize that by signing this document, it means you will not go to trial, and you accept the, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Rupert gets there before Wendy does. And, you know, reporters are waiting. Probably post-reporters are waiting to see what the boss man's doing. So he's looking pretty dour. Like, he gets there, you know, sits down. He's just kind of frowny and whatever, like you would. Wendy walks in about 20 minutes later, and Rupert Murdoch lights up.
Really?
Like, yep, smiles. He is genuinely happy to see her. And they have two daughters together, so it's not like... And obviously, he is an involved parent. Like, say what you will about Rupert Murdoch, but... He's like, he kept prudence when, again, men in that era usually didn't. He's super. He
accounted for all of his kids.
Yeah. All of his kids have jobs in the company. And well, not anymore, but like James bailed. But so as of this writing, Wendy is still single, living in New York City, raising Grace and Chloe. On March 4th of 2016, Rupert married Jerry Hall.
What?
Mick Jagger's partner of 20 plus years.
You're kidding.
The mother of Mick Jagger's four children.
Oh my God.
In a ceremony in London. And a week later, Rupert turned 85. So hope springs eternal. And the Murdoch clan's family reunions are gonna be lit. Rupert did not immediately support Donald Trump in 2016, but came around to him And once Trump was in office, it has been reported that Rupert asked if the president could have the U.S. intelligence services look into whether Wendy was a Chinese intelligence operative.
Oh my God.
It has further been reported in Rupert's Wall Street Journal, no less, that U.S. intelligence warned Jared and Ivanka that Wendy was using their friendship to advance Chinese interests. Wendy and
we're
Rupert's,
not saying.
We're just telling you what Rupert's papers wrote. Wendy and Rupert's daughters, Grace and Chloe, have full stakes in the multi-billion dollar family trust, a decision of Rupert's that caused some anger with the older children and Anna. To smooth things over, he gave every one of his kids $150 million in cash, which would do the job.
What? $150 million?
Yep. Just, oh, don't worry. Here's a down payment.
Cool.
Yeah, here's a down payment on your inheritance. Don't worry about it. $150 million.
Please don't be mad at me.
Chump change. That's kind of right. Don't be mad.
I'm Scrooge McDuck. Here, yeah. Take some gold.
So we can expect that the Torv Murdoch children and the Dang Murdoch children will have decades of uncomfortable events to get through together.
Jesus Christ.
In the U.S., it appears that succession planning is in full effect. In March of 2019, 21st Century Fox, the entertainment arm, was sold to Disney for $71 billion.
Excuse me? $71 billion?
Mm-hmm. And Fox Corp, which includes Fox News, Fox Business, and Fox Sports, was spun off into its own standalone company with Lachlan Murdoch at the helm. Lachlan is said to be even more conservative than his father, but given the state of conservatism today, it is not clear to me whether that means Lachlan believes in lizard people and the Hollow Earth theory. Who knows? In any case, it's fair to say that the Australians of the 1930s, wondering aloud whether Keith Murdoch's media empire was healthy for democracy,
had a point.
Rupert Murdoch has spent decades corrupting Western institutions and feeding internal resentments while making personal decisions that leave him wondering whether he spent 14 years married to a Chinese spy. It's a weird life.
Unbelievable.
And one that future generations may well look back on as the person who brought an end to the age of democracy in the West. Rupert Murdoch, everybody.
Oh my God. That is some trash.
It did end up being a little funny.
That is some trash.
That story had everything. True crime, international
espionage.
Stories
this week had everything. So let's talk about trash cans.
Yeah, how do you... Mary Queen of Scots gets a lot of trash cans.
Mary Queen of Scots gets...
A lot
of trash cans with crests and gunpowder. I don't know.
You want to break it out by...
Yeah.
Split up, maybe?
Mary and Francois as a death. That's just sad. Yeah. But I can't imagine that was going to be a very fruitful marriage for a very long time.
We'll give that a one. We'll give that one trash
sad.
Can.
Yeah. Darnley? Pshh. 10 trash cans with gunpowder and
a
syphilis.
Copenhagen.
No, that's Bothwell.
Oh, damn it.
Darnley's the murder your secretary.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Darnley gets 10. Oh, Darnley.
10 Italian trash cans.
10 Italian trash cans designed by Gucci on fire.
Sure.
With syphilis. Bothwell. There was a lot of machination. He's a bad dude. I can't say what her, I don't know. That's probably less trash cans than Darnley. 4 trash cans. Mary Queen of Scots herself. I don't know.
A lot.
Like, bad taste.
Because her picker is broken.
Her picker is broken. So she couldn't find the trash if she wanted to because her picker's broken. There you go.
All right.
All right, Murdoch.
5 wig-wearing trash cans for Mary Queen of Scots?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So I think with Murdoch, it's probably best to break it out by as well. The first one, like, maybe 2, just because it does seem like mom
seems
ended
a little
up
lighter.
Being gross with their daughter.
I'm going higher for Anna Torv for sure.
Yeah. Oh,
31 years. That's
yeah, that's
just...
that's 5. That is just, you're cheating on, like, it's such, you're right. It's a classic... It's just a trope of middle-aged businessman. Like, anyway.
Okay, 5 for that.
5 for that. You know, I think that Wendy Dang probably is maybe not officially an intelligence asset, but certainly is you know, answering questions when they're asked. And so you've got one of the most powerful men in the world who is so tied into, you know, three major Western democracies, married to someone who is feeding information to, let's say, an adversary.
You would tell us how many trash cans they would get, but it would compromise your intelligence. Sure.
It's classified.
It's classified.
But the number is large. And then honestly, you know, I have a good feeling about this Jerry Hall thing. I think he's had his last divorce.
Well, Jerry Hall's...
She's got a...
significantly younger.
Well, she's like 59. And he's 85? 87?
Yeah,
88.
Okay. Sure. Keeps him on her toes.
She's older than Wendy Dang.
Jeez, dang. Well, hope springs eternal. We wish Rupert Keith Murdoch the very best. Keith Rupert. In his fourth marriage.
And, I mean, seriously, Lachlan, like, he kind of scares me because to be more conservative than Rupert Murdoch.
I don't even know how you do that.
Don't you put on a uniform when that's the case?
Wowza. And that's a wrap for another episode of Trashy Divorces. So many trash cans. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of Trashy Divorces. I hope you enjoyed that whole wild and crazy ride as much as we did. Keep your head about you. Go fishing more. Wear some shorts.
Keep that head on those shoulders.
Keep it freedom. Thanks, y'all.
Keep it inky.
We're done.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Keep it trashy.
And thanks to you for listening. Trashy Divorces is a Hemlock Creatives production, created and produced right here in Atlanta, Georgia, by us, Stacy and Alicia, with a little research and writing help from the brilliant Melissa O.
Our art is by Sydney V. Smith. That's SydneyVSmith@carbonmade.com. And our music is used with permission of Ratsy. Check her out at Ratsy's store on Instagram. And definitely drop into Ratsy's store anytime you're in Oberlin, Ohio.
You can contact us at TrashyDivorces@gmail.com or find us on the World Wide Web at TrashyDivorces.com.
If you need more trash candy in your life, our Patreon community includes some of the very best humans around and thousands of hours of bonus content at every level of support. Join the fun at Patreon.com/TrashyDivorces.
Interested in some Trashy Divorces swag? Check out our merch shop and Trash Panda Enthusiasm Society at bit.ly/trashygear.
Want to advertise with us? Reach out to sales@advertisecast.com for more information.
And last but not least, come play with us on social media. I keep most of our Trashy Divorces Instagram hopping. Stacy and I share it up over on Facebook, including our Trashy Divorces podcast discussion group. Come join us over there, and thanks again, everybody, for listening.
Keep it trashy, y'all.